This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Okay, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here, and we're just waiting for one of our friends to call in, and that is Mr. Wes Nakama. We're going to talk about some event occurring briefly with the Asian American Journalist Society, and it's going to be a Google Hangout. And so that's what we're going to talk briefly about that, and this is regarding the Vincent Chin Ho, that we talked about 2-3 weeks ago. And so anyway, when we get him to call in, it's going to be a pretty good thing that it's a follow-up, and it's the attempt to address the anniversary of his death, this gentleman in Detroit that was killed. And so there's some events planned around that. And again, as you know, the intent really is to help do anything we can to stamp out hatred, bigotry, racism, or what have you. So, and we'll also be talking about, I don't know if you saw today's paper or saw the news yesterday, there is the two goats up there at Makapu'u, that now I know many of you probably say they're just goats, and I probably in the old days would have agreed with you, but because I've gotten a little wiser and a little more sensitive and understand what it means to be a decent human, you start caring. So that situation is something that, however you look at it, yes, these animals are hunted, and people eat them. But nobody should be allowed or be forced or put in a predicament where they stand. And I say nobody. I'm not saying that the sheep are people, but we should respect them. It's a life. And so no one or nothing, not a thing, should be placed on a ledge about 300 feet up, standing on a metal wire fence, so to speak, and just staring death in the face for 4 days or 5 days. And the state agencies and the government, other government agencies that's responsible, do absolutely nothing. And this is per the citizens who have taken the time to call. So we'll talk about that. And again, I have Mike Ostendorp with me. We got more information on the fire there at Lulule and some of the developments. And we're going to be talking about some of that and the memorandum of understanding between the city and the state, the federal government. So we'll be knocking a couple things around. So, Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
All right. And let's just talk about the fire, because when we talked last time, you hadn't gotten the email, the original email. Good morning, Wes. Good morning. Good morning, Wes.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, how are you doing?
All righty. So tell us about this event that's coming up with the Vincent Chin.
Okay, through the marvels of modern technology, we're able to have a national town hall via the Internet. It's called a Google Hangout, and it's 20 different locations across America. We're going to be commemorating and discussing the 30th anniversary of the death of Vincent Chin. And, Carol, as you know, last month we hosted the Asian American Journalists Association, Hawaii chapter, hosted a screening of the documentary film Vincent Hu. It's been 30 years. June 23rd will be the 30th anniversary of the death of Vincent Chin, who is a Chinese-American, basically murdered in Detroit, which was, I guess today would be described as a hate crime. He was a Chinese-American, basically murdered by two white males who had been working in the auto industry. One of them was laid off from his job in the auto industry. And remember, this is Detroit 1982, when a lot of anti-Japanese sentiment, because of the Japan's dominance movement into the dominance of the car industry, and resulting in a lot of, layoffs in the American auto industry. And so, this is the 30th anniversary. There's still issues as far as, hate crimes and discrimination and bullying. Even we have the incident of the hazing incident of that private Asian American private who ended up dying recently. So these kind of issues are still prevalent, and we're going to have a national town hall, and the AAJ Hawaii chapter is hosting a get-together at R&D in Kaka'ako, 691 Awahi Street in Kaka'ako. We're going to get together and join via the Internet, this national town hall, and listen, and then discuss amongst ourselves, some of these issues again.
Mm-hmm. So that's at R&J. It's 691 Awahi Street?
Yes, R&D, actually.
R&D, okay.
The name of the place. And there'll be refreshments. A bunch of us from the AHA Hawaii chapter will be there. Everybody is welcome to come, but you need to RSVP so we know how much seats to set up, and also how much refreshments to have. And people can RSVP at our email, aajahawaii.org.
So that's aajahi at gmail.com?
At gmail.com, yes.
Okay. All righty. So that's 7:30 this Saturday, 7:30 a.m., I should say, at R&D Honolulu, 691 Awahi Street. That's between Keawe and Coral Streets in Kaka'ako.
Correct. And we're meeting at 7:30. We're going to get settled, and the actual town hall starts starts at 8 a.m.
Okay.
And again, it's kind of exciting because, you know, like I said, through the marvels of technology, we can all connect with, there's going to be viewing parties not just in Kakaako, but also in Philadelphia, in Raleigh, North Carolina, in Michigan, in Chicago, Austin, Texas, Dallas, Houston, like I said, 20 locations all over the country, California, Denver. So it's kind of exciting. Everybody's going to be tuning in at the same time. And like I said, you know, marking this anniversary of this major event. Anyway, what happened with Vincent Chin, you know, not only was he brutally beaten and ended up dying, but the two assailants basically walked away with a no contest plea and no jail time at all. I mean, they had like a $3,000 fine. And we discussed this last month. Or about 6 weeks ago on your show, Carol, and how, you know, it really sparked a national movement among the Asian American community. The first time, really, that the Asian American community got together on a national scale, mm-hmm. And you know, rallied behind this injustice. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's important now, 30 years later, you know, not to forget what happened.
Mm-hmm. And you're not just focusing on Asian Americans. I want to make that clear to people. It's an injustice on anyone is what you're trying to stamp out, correct?
Correct. And you know, we've seen it through in the 30 years since. As we said, you know, a lot of hate crimes have happened since then, whether not just any kind of race, but even, you know, gays and lesbians and, mm-hmm. you know, post 9/11, we saw a lot of, you know, racial, hatred emerge. And, so, you know, it's been 30 years, but we still have a ways to go as far as, you know, racial harmony and just, you know, treating one another, you know, with the proper respect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Wes, we'll give another plug on it, but then I hope all of you out there join in and send an email, RSVP, to aajahi@gmail.com.
And yes, thanks for saying that right. I didn't have it in front of me, but yeah, aajahi@gmail.com. If we can, we'd like the RSVPs to come in by June 22nd.
Okay.
Just so we can get a head count, like I said, we're going to have refreshments, free refreshments. And, you know, just get together. And then the program itself starts at 8 a.m., and it'll be from 8 to 9. Again, it's a national live stream, you know, Google Hangout. There'll be moderators from across the nation. And then after 9 a.m., when the thing ends, we can have some discussion among ourselves and, you know, some networking and mm-hmm. fellowship among ourselves. But, you know, like I said, this is going on. There's viewing parties at 20 different locations across the United States. So this is a national event.
Right. Well, I was happy you called in, and we'll get the word out. And is there anything else? Okay.
Yeah. And for more information, you can look at our website, aajahawaii.org.
All righty, keep up the good work, and let's fight it any way we can.
Okay, I appreciate it, Carol.
All right, brother. All right, aloha. Yeah, Mike, people say hatred, and each event in history, they have one common element, ignorance and stupidity. I mean, they say it's money, and they say it's race. But we got to start off to build the nucleus for hatred is ignorance.
True.
You
true.
Know, because if you don't learn that the next human being next to you, male, female, or whatever, is equal as you are, that's the start of it, in my opinion. And you've done many cases to protecting people's interests and what have you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know, you know, if you're not educated, how are you going to be tolerant?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I appreciated the Army. Coming from Mississippi, everything was black and white, and I don't mean Michael Jackson's song. I mean, it was a reality. We danced to a different drama there. Going in the Army, you were presented with many people, different cultures, different types, and you learn tolerance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we have, speaking of the fire, we have Reed Shimabukuro on, and we're going to talk about that, and then we'll talk later on about the sheep and what have you, and the goats that are standing. Good morning, Reed. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Sarah. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Yeah, what's new? And right off the bat, I'm curious. Did they ever determine the cause or come close to the cause of that Lulule fire?
I believe they reported that it was undetermined. They finalized their investigation and reported that the fire was undetermined on where it started and how it started.
Wow. Okay.
At the time the fire started, did they have a brush truck out there?
No, they didn't.
Aren't they supposed to have a brush truck out there in order to, you know, to just be prepared for those kind of incidents?
Well, what happened is before our station closed and we had a permanent 24-hour crew out there, we did have an engine company and a brush truck out there. And you know, the brush truck is designed to go more into tight spaces, designed to go off-road if needed, and it is specifically designed for brush fires.
Mm-hmm. And so it's no longer situated there, huh, or stationed there?
It's no longer there. It still currently isn't there, and we've been manning the station for 24 hours now for a full week.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a pretty good inventory of brush trucks that are scattered throughout the island.
Mm-hmm.
And probably could use a brush truck out there since we're going to be standing by for at least 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not too sure what a brush truck actually is, but is this something that will go down, you know, the highway very easily? I mean, it seems to be, if it's built for off-road to go through that kind of terrain, I kind of envision this thing to be lumbering down the freeway on its way to a fire. Or is
it can travel on any road, no problem.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's not excessively large. It's really about the size of a normal fire truck, probably a little smaller. But what it is designed to do is to get into tight areas. Also, you know, go off-road. Where an engine, a normal engine company, that truck is normally designed to stay on hard, packed pavement and not venture off-road.
And it's limited to, unless you string out a bunch of hoses, but I've seen these brush trucks, and they actually go very near and close to the fire. You see them occasionally at Makua being used up there on occasion.
So it's basically an essential piece of equipment to assist the firefighters.
I'll let Reed answer that one.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
How essential is this as in the arsenal of firefighting for you folks, this brush truck?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, of course, everyone's going to judge based on my opinion, but you buy brush trucks for the very reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a brush truck.
Mm-hmm.
So you house them at stations that are more susceptible of brush fires, and Lulule is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, up until April 22nd of this year, we had one there 24 hours a day. It may not have stopped the fire completely, but you know, brush hose compared to our normal fire hose is a lot lighter, a lot, you know, easier to maneuver, and that's what that truck is equipped with. Also, it's also equipped with a deck gun, both on the bumper and on the roof, and it just helps, you know, the spread of the fire and trying to contain it as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. It's all about fire suppression. So I would think, as I've observed in California and other places where they have chaparral or sagebrush scrub communities where there's lots of fuel and lots of duff, they want to be able to get right there and squat, you know, suppress the fire and flames immediately as quick as they can. I can't imagine them taking an essential piece of equipment out, and then it's the fire spreads. See, this is why I'm interested in this. I believe there were some errors made before and after, And I don't want to sit by and because it's there's this memorandum of agreement that we got, and it talks about the city and the feds having an agreement. But the problem is it's the taxpayer who's suiting up and fighting the fire on federal property, yet federal government says their property is sovereign. But if a fire starts on federal property, they should be more aggressive, and I think they should compensate or pitch in and buy a helicopter for the fire department, the Honolulu Fire Department, and we all can use it, or give us one, or, you know. Would that be helpful, Reed?
It would be helpful, but it's highly unlikely that that would happen. We're in a period right now where, you know, we're cutting the budget, and we're looking at any type of cost-saving measure. I think for us to have wishful thinking that our department would get a helicopter, I mean, we would love it. No, don't get me wrong. We do have some firefighters that are helicopter pilots that we could probably get something started pretty quick. But,
well, I guess.
Well, actually, the memorandum says that the feds are supposed to provide helicopters. I mean, the mayor signed it. Carlisle signed this thing. Why doesn't he enforce it? And also,
well, we normally rely on military resources when it comes to helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like the week of the fire, I believe we did have some resources out of the Marine Corps base.
But they weren't called on.
They weren't called on the first day, I believe, because of what they said, high wind. But mm-hmm. I believe on the second day, the picture that was taken, and I think was in the newspaper, clearly shows that it was a Marine helicopter.
Oh, yeah, the Sea Stallion. I'm the one. Those are my pictures. That's all after. But the original response was, you're not getting a helicopter, and we don't care, basically, and the fire got out of control. And of course, they ran, and, you know, the backside's exposed now, you know. So I really don't care much about the day after, because that's they were trying to play catch-up.
Well, especially when you see on the 6 o'clock news the Honolulu Fire Department helicopter
right.
doing the very same thing they claim the federal one can't do.
Right. So, you know, I like to, you know, sort through the hogwash that the feds are tossing out there. I believe if we start from scratch in that there's a very dangerous situation there, it got out of control, it exposed the men up there to a danger, and there's equipment, and what money are they saving anyway? The civilian homes that burned, the natural resources, the millions that we put in protecting habitat, and then all of a sudden some knucklehead decides that he's going to save money to look good, but never consulted the community, and that very community who would probably have an objection, especially to see this fire burn out of control.
Well, also, I think... No, go ahead, Reed. You go first.
Just as, you know, an update to where we're at right now, we're still providing 24-hour coverage out there. I think this is going to be our final week. And on Friday, we had a settlement conference with the Federal Labor Relations Authority, which is the FLRA, based on our unfair labor practice that was
mm-hmm.
filed. So we agreed to this. We agreed to, one, we're going to get back to the table and negotiate this.
Mm-hmm.
And try to come up with what's the best plan of action for not just the federal government, but for Lu'ulele also. And, you know, we're hoping from the union's perspective that, you know, we can do something to keep this station open. We understand, don't get me wrong, we understand that we're in a cost savings period right now, you know, but we need to talk about ways that we can cut the budget without putting the community at risk, without putting the installation at risk. And, you know, everything should be put on the table right now. So, you know, we already have a meeting scheduled for Monday. And I think mm-hmm. going into it this week, you know, we're hoping for a positive result.
Well, we'll get positive results because, I, you know, let's just face it, and I really appreciate you even taking time and calling us, but would they tolerate, the Honolulu Fire Department, or the federal fire department tolerate a business saying, well, we're not going to put the 12 fire extinguishers that you required us to have because that's rational and you've decided that some equation, it's the right thing to do for human public safety and property safety. We're only going to put in 5 fire detectors. And, oh, and by the way, we're going to take away, you know, we're just not going to have an electrician come in because business, we're not selling as many sandwiches. We're not going to have the electronic fire detectors or smoke detectors. We're not going to put in the sprinkler system in the apartment high-rise. And so we then step back when someone, the building burns down or someone gets injured or the firemen are exposed for unreasonable or unnecessary danger. We say, oh, it was done for cost saving.
You know, let's focus, you know, because we've been talking about the public, you know, the environment at home. But you just mentioned it. What about the firemen?
Yeah.
What about the firefighters, putting them at risk because we want to save some money and we won't have a brush truck or the proper equipment to help them out?
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have any respect anymore for our firefighters?
It's all about saving the buck. And hey, I would just say don't buy 2 of those missiles or the big ammunition or a case of them. That would probably pay for 5 trucks, you know.
No, I think it's irresponsible not to man the station 24/7.
Yeah. I just hate
when you have an ammunition dump there.
Yeah. I just
well, I can tell you, Carol, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
we have 2 deputy fire chiefs that are at a pay grade of a GS-13. You know, that's on the higher pay scale when it comes to government employees. But, you know, that's one of our issues here is we had received temporary funding through the Air Force when we aligned with Joint Base. We emerged, taken with Pearl Harbor. And we had a temporary funding of 18 months to fund a second deputy position so that we could provide a position for a chief that was at Hickam to come over to the Navy side. Well, that chief has left, and our department has chosen to promote into that position. And so now that position may be $120,000 a year, and that funding, that temporary funding, expires at the end of or the beginning of this month. That means we're going to carry him for another 6 months until he retires at the end of the year, costing taxpayers another possibly $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I say let's put everything on the table, I think we need to put everything on the table.
Right.
You know, and if there's excessive spending in areas, we should look at those areas before we cut a fire station.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that same vein, these same brilliant people who want to save money, because ultimately, I just have to keep saying, when a fire gets out of control and burned to that magnitude and has that great of an impact, as we've seen, their equation didn't fit. It's not relative to this. We need to go back to them and either fire and rehire or do something, but to just sit back and then to have them toss out. And I noticed they had a meeting, did they not, or some kind of a press conference, Reed, to talk about the fire?
Yes.
A public meeting.
And
you know, and that's sickening because they are being political. They, even the city, oh, they did a good job. If losing control of a fire and shutting down a fire station and not telling the public when in a munitions magazine storage area, I'm sorry, politics, there's no place for it. Something went wrong here. They screwed up, and we should keep talking about it until they come clean.
Well, what's stored up there is classified as high explosives. I mean, we know what happened in Waikele when the fireworks went up. I'm not too sure if they're classified as high explosives, but, you know, the contractor, for instance, who's working inside the depth, I'm not too sure mm-hmm. what it looks like even, but we know it's not outside. Whoever the contractors are who are working there, they're not protected. But when they signed the contract originally,
mm-hmm.
they were assured that there was 24/7 protection, and now it's not. So if I was the contractor, I would be ticked off. I would demand that when I start at 7:30, I want my firefighters on the job, ready to roll, right in there in the vicinity at the fire station, not mm-hmm. being 20, 30 minutes away. So, you know, they're left unprotected. or are we wasting more money and they just sit outside the door and wait for the firefighters to show up and start the day shift?
Mm-hmm. Reed?
In my opinion, the contractor was never notified that fire protection was only going to be provided for an 8-hour period. And I believe our department is providing that 8-hour period of coverage. simply to provide peace of mind for the contractor that's out there, that while they're there, they have the necessary coverage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're talking about a period once they go home, that anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when we decide, or when we say that we're going to rely on mutual aid, I have a huge problem right now with what we say we're going to do and what we actually do. Because if we're going to solely rely on mutual aid after the 8-hour period, why are we standing up a 24-hour fire watch right now when, according to our fire chief, mutual aid is sufficient?
Right.
We should be relying on mutual aid right now,
mm-hmm.
if that's what he's saying.
Well, a couple things, so that, and we're going to post this up, this agreement memorandum, later. 5/7/12 it was signed by Elizabeth Contreras. The city signed this agreement 4/18/12. I'm sorry, 5/16/12. Peter Carlisle did, and then Pons for the commander. So we agreed to all of this. Here's what troubles me about this scenario that's playing out here. We know the Y. Kelly. The politics, and thankfully the gentleman was recognized, a firefighter that responded to Y. Kelly and went in, pulled the guys out or something, recovered. This reminds me that the city and county of Honolulu allowed these conditions to develop because they didn't want the landowner or the lessee to experience a high cost, right? It was cost cutting. The state health department was remiss in handling the permits and requiring them to adhere to these conditions that were part of the permit. So it's all about saving money and jeopardizing lives, it seems to be. So when something bad happens, they run silent, right? So the firemen out there at Lu'ulu'ulei are going to be similar to the ones at Y. Kelly. They are responding to something that we really don't know the magnitude of it. They can't determine what it started from or where it started, right?
Right.
So,
well, I mean, wait. I mean, mutual aid. That sounds real good, but in a way it sounds like passing the buck, because who's actually going to call in? I mean, who's going to notify whom?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, let me clarify that, because Mike brings up a good point. There's two type of aids here. One is mutual aid, and another one is called automatic aid. Okay, mutual aid is, we agree in principle and in theory that, and in partnership, that if the Honolulu Fire Department needs our assistance and they call, and we have resources available, we will agree to help and assist them, and vice versa. But a call needs to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if somebody is out at Lu'ulu'ulei after 4 o'clock, who's going to call? It's going to be probably a base police officer who has no fire suppression equipment.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the nearest responding company gets out there, which would probably be from Station 5 at Manana, that's 35, 40 minutes.
And what is his orders? You know, is he reluctant to report a fire because he want to make sure he's not overreacting and doing a false alarm? Or is he going to be able to assess, is it really a fire, or is he going to get out and take his jacket off and try to beat it out? And
he's not even going to be there. I mean, think about the location.
I mean, the officer that does,
right.
Security guard that does, finds it.
Well, whoever's going to notice it is going to be, I think at that point that fire is so big that you have to see it from a distance, because no one will be close by,
right,
or wherever it starts, unless it starts right there next to the road.
Well, the reason I'm concerned, I think this is all poppycock that the feds are putting, and the city, because they're part of this game to make it look good, they're brother. But the problem is, just start looking from a layman's term, the amount of fuel that's available there and the dryness of it, right? And these are what, Keavi and the other scrubs and what have you?
Mutual aid, the way it works is, it says, I will help you. That means Honolulu Fire Department has to be the first one that would have to wake up, because they're the only one in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to call the Federal Fire Department and say, hey, you know what, there's a fire out at your place, you know, help us. I mean, who's the first one to know?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the federal firefighters are not out at the magazine, munitions magazine, mm-hmm. then they have to rely on the Honolulu guys to call them.
Read.
Right. I gotta, you know, at least put this disclaimer out there. This is in no way an attack against the Honolulu Fire Department, because as far as I'm concerned, the Honolulu Fire Department takes care of their responsibilities. They have their proper coverage in their respective areas.
Mm-hmm.
This is strictly about Federal Fire Department and the Department of the Navy.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, but from a taxpayer standpoint, I don't need them standing there clouding the issue and saying sweet things and tossing rose petals in our path. We want to know what happened. And the Honolulu Police Fire Department did an excellent job. Nobody got hurt, saved property. But the problem is, the crux of this whole issue is that the federal government has the ability to just carelessly decide, we're not going to call in fire, wave off the helicopters, we don't need them, and then we lose a fire, the control of a fire. That's what this is about, and if people get their feelings hurt, it's nice being a civilian, not being inside of that system, and we're able, and from my perspective, able to simply ask those questions, and I love all those guys in the fire department. My hat's off to them, they're my heroes, but on the other hand, all we need is a fire to get out of control and kill someone, and then we could have worked it out earlier.
Or have a firefighter get hurt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean defense is just shirking the responsibility in relying on the city firefighters to just be there so that we can save some money on the federal side. when that should be... The feds should be spending the money because we're about as broke as it goes in the city.
Well, we got, I'm just being facetious here, but imagine we lose control of a fire. The guy that's handling, the head of this, is being paid handsomely, beautiful, great rewards.
So he can retire.
So then what are we paying him good money for? Let's take that money, that salary, because he obviously can't make good decisions. Let's just buy a brush truck and it's there and we don't need him to wave something off. Maybe they can respond and suppress it immediately. I don't know. I'm just... hold on one second, Rita. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question? Hello?
Hello, Kara?
Yes. Hold on, Kathy. Hold on. Good morning. You have a call, comment or question?
Yeah. I want to get back to that mutual aid or automatic aid difference in that. In that mutual aid agreement, spells out what the city will handle or will mutually take care of. Would there be like Fort DeRussy, Holly Coa, and other areas outside our jurisdiction? It does not say anything in there about Lulu Lake. That is something that the federal is supposed to take care of.
You there?
Yeah, he is. He's talking about that the fires, the Lualele
mutual aid.
Yeah, it doesn't cover that area, but I don't see that. I don't see a restriction in the memorandum of understanding. Maybe I'm not reading it correctly.
Reed, are you?
No, the caller called in.
I know, but does he have a question or Reed? Can you?
I think what he's mentioning is that there's some federal installations that like the Holly Cole Hotel, that is actually belongs to the federal government, that we have a mutual aid agreement that because we don't have a fire station out there, that the Honolulu Fire Department will respond to those remote or isolated locations like the Holly Cole Hotel and certain federal installations, maybe Diamond Head. Not every military base or military installation has a fire station.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just quicker and easier to use that mutual aid agreement to have the Honolulu Fire Department respond to those calls.
And it doesn't spell out that Lululei is covered under there. That is something that says that they have to be called out.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be requested by the fire chief or his representative.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a Navy instruction that I was reading, and there's a risk analysis that's required that needed to be provided by our fire chief to justify the category change from a 1A to a 1B.
we had requested a copy of that risk analysis to see what he uses to justify closing the station.
And he hasn't produced that, right?
I'm hoping he's going to produce that document on Monday at our meeting.
Yeah. Now, let me offer one thing here. I have requested on the FOIA documents from the federal government, the firefighters, the department over there, and the Navy. They have not responded to even acknowledge they received my FOIA. So those of you that might wish to say, well, we should get the other side. Well, the other side only talks to the media under their terms, and they don't, I guess, recognize citizens who is really the ones that they owe an explanation to. So anyway, I just offer that for the listeners out there thinking that we didn't do our homework. I've reached out. I've sent a FOIA out. They've just simply ignored it, and they generally, the policy is 3 days, they send you a letter to tell you they received it.
You know, the caller mentioned Fort DeVoussie National Memorial. There are provisions in here, or certain locations are identified in a memorandum, like Kaena Point Satellite Tracking Station, Mount Ka'ala, Hicken Petroleum Products, and so on, Coast Guard at Sand Island. But what the reason those facilities were identified is because at those locations, the fire chief of the Honolulu Fire Department will be in charge of all firefighting operations at the aforementioned installations. All equipment used in carrying out this agreement will, at the time of action, be under the control of the Honolulu Fire Department. So the reason certain locations were singled out is to lay out that those locations will be handled, or the Honolulu Fire Department chief will be in charge. This is not this paragraph does not mean that only those ones here, mm-hmm. You know, as he implied in his call, supposedly the Lualele facility is not included, and mm-hmm. therefore there's no mutual aid available. That's not true. It just only specifies who's going to be in charge at those locations.
Right. You there, caller?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. So anyway, does that anything else you want to add, or?
There's some mutual aid, like at Lululele or any other military installations that the federal does have a station at.
Okay.
It spells out that the fire chief will have to request city to come on. It's not an automatic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that would include Lululele.
Okay.
Right. But in order to request the Honolulu Fire Department to come out, you need to have a federal firefighter on the job, on the spot.
Correct. It has to be the fire chief or his representative, as mm-hmm. it's spelled out in that mutual aid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's we'll try to hash it out amongst ourselves, because they're sure not calling, and we didn't get an invite to their so-called press and to educate the public on this. But again, go ahead.
Carol, real quick. Something that it requires in what I believe the fire analysis is the response time.
Mm-hmm.
The response time is covered for us. We've got to respond within 5 minutes 90% of the time.
Uh-huh.
That's our response requirement. We've got to meet the response and be on scene within 5 minutes 90% of the time.
Well, did they do an exemption or some kind of legal? How did they get around this by closing the station?
They can do a mutual aid agreement that would require the mutual aid company coming in to respond, I think, within 10 minutes 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no accountability, and there's no level of responsibility for whoever the mutual aid company is. They're basically just doing us a favor, but the ultimate responsibility falls on the host installation.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I can't
get to
you already.
Yeah, well.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, if this is a requirement, how do they get around this? I mean,
well, first of all, we're the only ones talking about it. So everyone else felt that they did a good job. Hey, they squirted a lot of water, and it's only 1,200 acres. But how many firemen were exposed to a great danger because some guy took it all on himself? And how much money? And I know that the fire departments, well, oh, they'll slap one another in the back, but I'm sorry. Fire out of control. They need to throw everything else to the wind and just say it's not working, and they need to rethink this whole process or be better at responding.
Well, I can tell you, if there was any money saved by closing the station, it was quickly absorbed already. All that savings was absorbed by the amount of overtime that they've been authorizing to provide 24-hour coverage now.
Wow.
Well, not only that, I mean, I hope that the city and county is going to put in a bill, because this memorandum of mutual aid calls for someone putting in a bill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once the city and county is going to hand over their bill, then there's a question, how much is the bill, and was any money saved now for having to pay the city and county for having been there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Navy instruction clearly states that if the fire starts on a military installation or a Navy installation, and it spreads to the community, that the Navy would be responsible for financial loss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's already in black and white in what we call the OPNAV instructions. It's in 11320 is the number.
And in my letter, my letter to the governor, I asked just that, him to recover the funds.
Well, actually, this is a city and county function.
Yeah, but no. What I mean, it went on the state lands.
Oh.
And so that, like the Port Royal, owned by the Navy, ran aground, damaged coral. It was a naval activity. It was a Navy fire at Lulule. So therefore, it got out of control, went into state lands. Then we should be seeking recovery of funding. And I asked the governor to conduct a task force to address this and not just show up on TV saying, oh, they did a good job, we did a good job, we don't want to offend anyone. If we can't have a discussion without injecting, we're good guys. No one's questioning the ability and the integrity of a fireman. We're saying that this system, the way it politically has evolved, is exposing people, especially firemen, to a greater risk, and especially the citizens in the community to a greater risk. That's what should be discussed, and I asked the governor this, but by the way, he doesn't find it necessary to respond to me either, so. so I feel like I'm very important right now, you know. But anyway, that's what we have going on with this situation. Anything else?
No, I appreciate your guys' time and you know, attention to this subject. It's important to us. It's important to every federal firefighter. You know, we take pride in that station, in that community out there. And, you know, we're just hoping that we can work to getting a better solution, a positive solution, and hopefully reopening that station with 24-hour coverage out there.
Mm-hmm. I hope we do, because I'd hate to have a fireman running there and not knowing what they're dealing with.
No, I want my firefighters, federal or city and county, state, I don't care which firefighters, I want them to be provided with the proper equipment. I don't want them to be handicapped. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, you know, you're handicapping them, mm-hmm, by not giving them, you know, and if the by rules and regulations, they're supposed to be responding 90% of the time within 5 minutes. Already the fire department cannot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, oh, well, you know what, we've got the city and county, and we can give them 10 minutes. Well, I'm not too sure how far away the next city and county station is, but are we handicapping them too? And here's the thing, within 10 minutes, again, who's going to make the phone call? You need the phone call. So right there, we know it's already impossible for them to be there within 10 minutes. So here, for the sake of saving some money somewhere,
mm-hmm,
the government is willing to violate all rules and regulations because they are what? They're the government. They can.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, Cal, we have a counterpart fire chief over on the mainland that brought up a really good point. They're experiencing budget cuts and brownouts of fire stations, and he told the mayor this: I'll cut a fire station. Tell me where you live. I'll cut that fire station first, and then we'll talk about everything else.
Yeah,
And I think that just kind of hits the nail on the head here. Nobody wants their community without fire protection. Mm-hmm. So the guys that are saying, well, these union guys are crybabies, and all they want to do is, you know, take more, you know, well, we agree with cutting the budget. It's just a matter of, let's sit down collectively and say, okay, where can we best cut the budget without jeopardizing the public?
Right. Carla, you have a comment or question real quick?
Yeah, Carol, I just got a question. Did you contact the congressional delegation about this situation, about the federal fire?
Not yet, but, you know, they're busy putting out their own little fires and campaigning right now, right?
Yeah, I'm probably going to contact them and let them know about this.
Yeah, because...
This is unreal.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Carol.
Thank you. Well, Reed, again, thank you for sharing with us and updating us on this. And you, Reed is the president of the Firefighters Union here. Federal Firefighters of Hawaii, local F-263. And this thing revolves around safety of the firefighters, safety of, and then I'm told last time the guy said we only ate in 18 hours, provided one meal. I mean, come on, you know, if anybody want to put a good face on that, when you screw up, you should stand up and own up to it. But not, you know, oh, they did a good job. I heard, you know, and high-ranking officials in the city going, oh, we don't have a problem with the federal government. What they did was great. I'm not calling to ask how many brownie points we want to give. I'm saying a fire is still burning, out of control at times, and you want to tell me how good they are? Sorry. You know, it's just wrong.
The firefighters did do a good job.
Yeah.
But the point is we are handicapping them from doing a better job or even just putting them in danger. I mean, not having a brush truck out there when it's a necessary piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Why? It makes no sense. Yeah. And that's the thing. And also I think part of it is, actually I like that about the mainland fire chief who told the mayor, let me know where you live. I think that's part of the problem, too.
Yeah.
And the people in Waianae should be ticked off because I think that's, it's just, oh, you know what? It's over on that side of the island.
Well,
we don't really have to worry about that.
Their neighborhood board is going to be asking questions this week, the coming meeting.
Right, because, you know, if this munition dump was right next to the rich homes, you know, the Gold Coast, I think we would be chirping a whole different picture.
I'll take you to the Marine Corps base right now and show you those nice homes that are sitting on the boundary. You dare do make one mistake or misstep like that, you'd be out of there on your head in a heartbeat. But over in Nanakuli, close it, no problem. You know, we need to go some training on the mainland. Don't train the firefighters at the lower rankings. And then I guarantee if we look, we'll see some kind of juicy golden parachute agreement like this gentleman that has this. What do you say he had? He's going to extend it. He's been paid for.
Oh, they're going to extend the one of the two chiefs is paid to extend it for six months.
So anyway, as always, follow the money to the top. Someone, they sit there and they finagle and they don't give a darn about the guy's safety and the public safety because they just want to exit the door with the loot. And that's what it's about, I believe.
You know, if this would maybe a different part of town, maybe that would be a different... You know, I like that analogy, too. Let me know, Mayor, where you live at. Because, you know, the people should be ticked off in Nanakuli side.
Well, Reed, thank you for joining us, and we'll keep us posted. If you got anything else, we can do it in the next hour, but is that it?
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, and say aloha to everybody out there, and stay safe.
And tell the firefighters thank you for their good work.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Aloha.
Okay.
On up the road, someone's gonna hurt you like you hurt me. Further on up the road, someone's gonna hurt you like you hurt me. Further on up the road, baby, you just wait and see.
Okay. Join us in the second half, and we'll be right back.
That old saying is true. You got to reap just what you
sow. Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu. For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Okay, alrighty, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. And sitting here with my good friend Michael Ossendorp. I told you earlier we were going to be talking about the situation with the goats over there. I'll call them goats or sheep because I didn't get a real close-up look. And unfortunately, for the conservation aspect of it, they appear to be mouflon with the large horns. But again, there's some theories, and I'll lay it out. About 6 months ago, the Department of Land and Natural Resources were discussing conducting a survey because they had concerns with the population of goats that had started growing up there on Kamehameha Ridge above Sea Life Park, above Makapu there. And I don't know what happened to that, but they had a concern with the population. And so what I'm concerned with is what happened to that? What happened to that that situation? Did they know that the animals were high numbers? And I think they did. But also, what happened up there? And again, some of you, the animal rights community, I would say that I am completely involved with this from various standpoints. Anyway, what is going on here? What is happening here is that up there on that ridge, there is a farm or a ranch situated there, and there's a suspicion that some of the animals, the domesticated animals, escaped and became feral. But these two goats or sheep are very large, really large. And what is going on with that is that these animals, I'm trying to sort through this to describe it so you don't think, because it would be unfair to the animal at this point. I'm motivated to talk about this because the people that saw it yesterday, that shared with me and called me, indicated 4 days before we had arrived that they witnessed these animals standing there, perched on this ledge. And they're standing on top of a wire fence, basically, the rockfall mitigation efforts or measures they put in place up there. So the DLNR and others fail to understand or take into account that if the goats were to be up there and migrate or step on that, they're not going to walk off of it because their feet get stuck in. So just laying the trying to lay it out for you, because I was both emotionally disturbed by what I saw. And yes, I know they're just animals to some, but I'd like to invite anyone, especially the bureaucrats, to just spend a half a day standing there, either on one leg or with one leg stuck in the wire and looking over the cliff. Is that humane? Would it have been an expense, or is it a great expense? But here's a great danger, Mike, that was over there. It's about 300 feet up, I'm guessing. And immediately underneath is the cars traveling.
Right.
What would a 300-pound goat or an animal falling from that height do to a family traveling in a car or an individual in an automobile or just hitting the road and killing the animal and causing an accident because someone coming along and swerving in the location is very dangerous? How could the government sit on its thumbs for 4 days doing nothing?
Well, I'm not too sure if the sheep weighs 300 pounds, but it's 300 feet down, mm-hmm. and you're going to get some velocity going, and even if it's just only 150-pound sheep, you know, it will do some damage. Mm-hmm. It will go through the windshield. It has the potential to kill whoever is driving, whoever is in the car, causing a car wreck. It's besides the suffering of the animals, which is a different story, but it is. It's just an accident waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't about making something out of nothing, folks. This is about, you know, it's one thing. Yes, this could be considered a hunting animal. But when you hear what DLNR is saying, well, first of all, it's just a wild animal. Okay, I'll accept that. Then there's an explanation. It's not our land. It's Hawaiian homeland. I'll say, okay, accept that. But somebody amongst you, even though it's someone else's land, the animal is under the purview of the DLNR, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, because they are tasked with enforcing wildlife laws, right? So how could they dismiss this, and who amongst them would allow an animal to stand on a ledge nervous? And what I witnessed there also is that the ewe, the female, she would stick her head underneath the male, the ram, and thrust and try to throw him off of that site so she could move closer, because she's just barely standing about a foot from the edge. And if you've ever played the game Twist, it's watching it unfold is just like that. She has to turn very slowly, and if he just decides to get pushy while she's turning, she's over the cliff.
Right, and they have a natural instinct to protect themselves. You know, you can actually look at the pictures on the Carol Cox .com, Carol Cox.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on your face page.
Yeah, go to carolcox.com, and there's a face page icon. Click on that, and you can see these pictures. We posted about 30-some pictures, but...
So, you're telling me that the state is passing the buck once again because they're claiming it's not our land? Is that what it's...
Well, the DLNR, there's a discussion that it's not their land, and it's some federal land, because the land is also part of it is situated up there, is that the old informant protection, witness protection program, that's where they housed, there was a small compound up there on top of the ridge where they housed witness and the protection effort.
Oh, no kidding, I never knew that.
Yeah, but, you know, they moved them down to the state capitol now, and they're running it. So, you know,
That's a good one.
And, but, you know.
All the way from the fourth floor down?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? Who put the fence up? I mean, there's this fencing material, this huge net or whatever you want to call it.
The DOT. Is, you know, because they're mitigating the highways. I'm assuming it's state highways, unless it's a city highway. But none of that is clear. But imagine, I would just like to have the people that's responsible and put them, just take them out and drop them on a ledge and leave them there. And while they're calling and people are standing around saying, you need to help these people, and then let them hear on an amplifier, just have it broadcast loud, the discussion. Well, it's not our land, it's the federal land. It's, you know, and I wonder how long they would take to become angered and realize what they're doing. Even though they're just goats or sheep, it's still inhumane. And to do that, and they got to endure the sun, they got to endure the rain, the wind, right? No food, no water. And still standing there, and you could see them looking as though they were becoming weakened, right?
Or just an accident waiting to happen for them to fall down. I mean, they're going to fall sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
But why isn't somebody just euthanize them?
Yeah.
Just eradicate them. Do something. But don't just let them sit there. Stand there on this. I mean, you know, the weather and so on, that's not really a big concern for wild sheep, but there's no water.
Right.
And they're going to weaken. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of time till they fall.
Yeah.
And then cause an accident.
And they don't have claws, so they're not going to be able to hold on. These are hooved animals. And so when they step, and what I observed also, the one ram was had gotten its foot entangled, stuck down into the mesh, and he was struggling to get out. So finally he was able to thrust himself and his body weight, snatch them and freed him, his legs from the wire. But guess what happened? It falls down the cliff for about 50 feet. And I mean a very hard fall. But he managed to catch himself, gather himself back up, and go back and find himself back in that little spot there and being timid.
Because he wanted to join the female.
Well, I think he just wanted to stay alive. But and
well, the net, I mean, according to the picture, that this net or this fence material is widespread over the whole area. I mean, the terrain itself is nothing to those sheep.
Oh yeah,
they live there.
They walk with their hand backwards and forwards, and
right.
Jump and play, and
it's the fence material that, you know, kind of which got them stuck, which hinders them. So whoever put up the fencing material should take responsibility.
Yeah. So this brings in the question of their environmental impact statement, its impact on wildlife and animals. Did they really see that? And here's what gets me. The state says, we are not able to do anything until Monday.
Why is that?
Because our biologist is out of town. Why is it that in this state, the guy, the key guy, is always unavailable, on training, or just out of it? That lie needs to be, someone needs to come up with a new lie, because first of all, it's an insult to the public's intelligence, because if you're saying you only have one biologist that can make these decisions, and given the characteristics and the locations of the islands, we're an island state, who would advance such a, or provide such an explanation, number one? And number two, it's an insult to the average federal authority or veterinarian or citizen veterinarians who would go out and know how to make up a dose to anesthetize, right?
Right.
Or dot the animal.
What exactly is the biologist going to do?
Yeah. So this
tell you what it is?
Yeah, this is the craziness that we have come to expect from government agencies. And I'd like to say we got their goat on this one, but the problem is there's no humor in it, you know. But I would like to ram these lies that they tell over and over down their throats and say you need to either start performing. You can't go. You say Monday is the day you can make it. But what about the previous days? What in your heart? Why did that biologist be dispatched the day that it was originally reported to you? You follow?
Well, maybe he was out of town already at that time, but you can't tell me that in this state we only have one person that could make a decision regarding those animals.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that...
call him up.
Call him up?
No, I mean... If you need the biologist, I mean, what's he going to do? Climb up there? I doubt it.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's posted on the internet. Why didn't you just call him? Yeah. All I had to do is say, hey, whoever he is, look, take a look at this webpage, or, you know, we're going to send you some email or some footage, and we want you to take a look at it and tell us what you think we should do. I mean, what, the guy doesn't have a cell phone? Or he or she? I don't know who it is.
Call him up, ask him what he needs. But he could work in concert. Or it says, that are they that lame that they don't have a mutual agreement with someone? Or they don't have a memorandum of understanding with someone other than these guys? I mean, it's not an endangered, it's not a bighorn sheep. Well, I'm hoping that it's not. You know, you never know. Someone may have smuggled one of those in and released it. You could never tell, right? But something is wrong there. So what do you do with this situation? Do you go by and do you shoot them to protect them and protect the public? Because, or do you take your time and try to recover them, and do they deserve a life or continue to live? 524-1080 is the number. I would really like to hear some of you out there what you think about this. I know one of the reasons I'm doing this and talking about it is that I was moved yesterday emotionally, not by the sight of seeing the animals up on the ledge solely. I was moved more by the people that would drive by and would say, where is the state? What are they going to do? Where is the police department? I mean, at any given time, these goats could jump, fight, you know, as they were doing, struggling to stay up, or slip, and boom, into the streets. Now, I didn't see anything. I understand the HPD had received a call, but this was an incident waiting to happen, potentially. And I don't know what the status is right now, but... What really moved me out there was one gentleman came. His name is Rodney. Rodney Mook, in fact, is his name. And he had witnessed it for 4 days. And he said he'd call, he'd talk. There were other people that have called and talked. There was a hang glider who also talked about flying right over them about 10 feet as he was descending and down the hill slope. Mook said, this is one time the government should spend money in a good use, save these animals. Others said, hey, we shouldn't, this is just cruelty, inhumane. Something should happen. Some even advocated going ahead and euthanizing it or doing something. But you didn't see any strategies, anyone planning, doing anything. That was a problem.
I'm just looking at the pictures on your webpage. Those are sheep. Mm-hmm. Those are not goats. Those are sheep.
Yeah, with that U has that sheep structure and the thickness, the diameter of the horns there.
I'm not doing a radio show. I have hunted in the past.
Yeah.
So, no, those are sheep. But what amazes me is the extent of that. Why a mesh? And didn't anybody ever give it any forethought that this is going to happen? I mean, we have animals, that we have pigs, goats, now we have sheep. This is predictable.
Well,
I mean, didn't anybody have any contingency plan here, or did the contingency plan just leave town and it's the only person that gets to make a decision? I mean, other islands have wildlife biologists.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm telling you, I didn't want to talk about that in such in great details, but now we're the cat out of the bag, so to speak. Here's one of the concerns I have. What about you and I who do hiking, and we take our dogs along with us on the hiking trail? And what happens when your pet dog strays out on that? Another problem. Why didn't they design it so that animals could never walk on top and over it and down? Because once they start to walk over it, they're never going to turn around and come back up. Because the fence and the angle of it, they'd be sticking their paws or their hooves in the holes and trying to get up, and that's just never going to happen. So it's a death trap. And for the biologists and for the DOT, and I know human life, and I know we don't want any bus crashes or anything, but we could be a little more sensitive when we plan these things and put them up. And then not to be able to do anything until Monday. And by the way, even if he came Monday, what's he going to do? He got the instant solution? So they'll have to wait another day or two?
Well, they could have walked. I mean, about the fence, I mean, on top, yeah, you could have put up a fence, but, would they have been able to put up a fence on the side? No, it's foreseeable that sooner or later a wild animal is going to get trapped in this.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we going to do when that situation arises? I mean, don't tell me that no one in the department ever thought about when we put up the fence. Let's not even think what could have. I mean,
yeah.
Well, sure, it saves the rocks from falling. But
and
the very reason they put the fence there is because they don't want any rocks to fall on the road down below.
Right.
To endanger the people driving by.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we allowing a combined 300 pounds sitting up there just waiting to drop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no, I didn't see any alarmed official. I did see Dave Smith, who hiked up the thing to make an assessment with binoculars, but he drove off, and the goats' night came, and I'm assuming they're still up there. So if anybody listening or know what the status is.
I mean, I know we have no traffic signs that say watch out for falling sheep, but we have traffic signs that say watch out for falling rocks. I mean, has anything been posted on the highway to warn motorists?
Nothing. But again, the DLNR and Forest and Wildlife knew that there was a population of sheep or goat up there. They know that. They did a survey. They were talking about eradication. The numbers were rapidly exploding, increasing. So, once again, I'm interested in the subject because the inhumane treatment that these animals are receiving, and also the reckless disregard that the DLNR, yet another state agency under Neil Abercrombie, is failing again to do what's right. We got the pie in the sky attitude with doing everything else, but when it comes to these simple things, for 5 days now, 6 days, looming overhead is a threat to the every single motorist that travel that highway in that area.
You know, in this state, we have eradication programs. I mean, for instance, Molokai, they go and eradicate goat, sheep, pigs. They use a helicopter. They have, you know, one guy flies, the other one shoots the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the cliff conditions. You know, they're under state contracts. Some of them are private contracts, but you know, we do it all the time.
Right.
I mean, it happens year round. You know, some people do like eradication. They think it's not humane, but you know, they do it to protect the environment. So they're willing to do it in order to protect the environment. Why aren't they willing to do something like this in order to protect the people?
Right. Well, with this concerns in my mind, thinking it out. Are they approachable? If you get too close, do they attempt to run, and there's nowhere to run but down, right?
Or falling. In this case, they're going to trip.
They're going to fall or trip, and it's straight down.
Right. You just can't on that
way. And I do understand the predicament that the state is in, and it's going to take some thinking, but I didn't see a team of thinkers out there.
Right. They just paralyzed as usual.
Yeah, the deer in the headlights, so to speak. That's what we can come to expect from the state in its handling. And then they tell you, oh, they're so eloquent when they speak at these gatherings amongst themselves, when they have the backslapping buddy-buddy gatherings and the conferences and all. Oh, you know, but they never come to the realization that you need some time to be able to react. And I mean react in a fashion that you take an action and understanding there's some consequences, but do something. So they could take a net, for example, put down there, string it out, bolt it down, and as a sheep, maybe 10, 20 feet down, they can catch them. Yep. Or, you know, put that net there as a backstop, take a dart gun, anesthetize them, let them slide down. But I didn't see that. I didn't see anybody out there giving consideration to that. You know, I didn't see the installer, the company that puts those things in. I didn't see any of their people standing around making an assessment. And nor has the citizens witnessed anybody standing around. Yesterday, I'm told, was the first time. Now, the conservation officers, they were there. But what can they do? They're not trained or skilled or certified to handle any dart guns, and if I was them, this would be one of those giving me the permission and authority with all the liabilities. I will, but recognizing there's some problems here, because if you dart them, they're not just going to stand there and then fall asleep.
No, they're going to fall over the ledge.
Yeah.
But you can't actually shoot nets from helicopters, but then...
Yeah.
You know, they chase animals all the time and trap them with those nets, shooting them from helicopters. But those are running animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what will they do when the helicopter approaches? I mean, helicopter has to get close enough.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to invite any citizen out there to just go and try to stand on a ledge and be sheepish about it and stand there. And then experience what... And I'm not... placing myself in the minds or body of an animal to speak for them, but I know darn well I would never want to experience that, and it's painfully unfolding. Something's got to happen, so I don't know what the answer is. But that's I guess that's what you come to expect. So anyway, 524-1080 if you have any comments or you want to talk. And by the way, happy Father's Day to a great many of you out there. And so I hope you don't sit around and drink too much beer and eat too much food, because these kinds of days sure help you put on the calories. But good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
I just want to know, where is this located? Oahu?
Yeah, so Oahu on
Makapu'u.
Oh, Makapu'u. Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye. Right.
Aloha. Anyway, Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Mr. Cox. You know, yesterday about, I think it was maybe about around 3 o'clock, I was passing by that way. I was going to the Turtle Bay Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw you out there, you and your equipment. And, again, like I said, that was in the late afternoon. On my way back, and it was really pretty dark, maybe about 7:30, you were still there. And I noticed in the beginning when I was passing by, you were the only person there. You and a few of the Hawaiian people that live in the area were really concerned. It seems like you folks are really the only ones who are concerned about this issue. And I just wanted to commend you for, you know, taking so much time and so much effort and being so concerned about the impact of these animals and also the impact that it could have on bicyclists who are going by, you know, pedestrians who might be possibly walking on that side, and especially the high volume of traffic that was on both sides of the street. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like something waiting to happen, a tragedy waiting to happen. And I'll just make it real brief. Just wanted to thank you for taking the time to stay out there so long and do what you did. You know, I listen to your radio show a lot, and I've seen you on TV, and you are really adamant about the environment and about protecting the Aina. And also about the people of Hawaii. And again, thank you so much for what you do.
Okay, well, thank you. Aloha. Sure. Good morning, Carly. You have a comment or question?
Good morning, Mr. Cox.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Are you there?
I'm right here listening, Em.
Oh, good. Don't worry about those little goats. They can take care of themselves. They look happy alongside that ridge.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, once I had a little goat, and there was a car in the yard. And I said, oh, no, there goes the goat climbing on the car. Mm-hmm. He has rubbery-type feet. And uh-huh. I said, that goat is going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? The goat stayed up there as long as he wanted. Then all of a sudden, he jumped down, and he went on his way eating more green grass.
Well, if they got rubber...
rubbery-type feet.
Rubber-type feet, so that one would suspect that they have rubber bodies, so we shouldn't worry that when they hit the ground, they bounce.
They can climb down. If they can climb up, I assure you they can climb down.
Well,
and they look very happy on top of that ridge.
Well, that might be one way to interpret it, but I will just say, and I don't mean to be anthropomorphic, I will just say to you, that to accept that your explanation would be to dismiss the things that I witness firsthand. So I can't accept that and not to take issue with you, but to accept what you're saying would say that I wasted my time and I'm an irrational person.
No, you didn't waste your time and you're not irrational.
So, but what
you're
I'm
just a concerned person.
Yeah, I understand.
That has never owned a goat.
Yeah, who, me?
Yeah.
No, I've never owned one.
Well, I've owned one, and I said, "Oh no!"
But I've raised quite a few of them.
Oh.
And they don't have rubber type feet. And
they do have rubbery type feet. They'll climb up on a slippery, polished car.
Yeah, they do.
And on the roof.
They do, Em. But I'm. Let me just share with you that while we might be educated, and you and I might know about one or two goats that we raise, these two deserve some humanity.
They look happy and they look healthy and they look fat, and that's a challenge for them to get back down for where they came
up. Well, they can't. They're stuck.
That is their recreation.
They're stuck on a fence type material.
They're stuck on a fence.
Listen, the fence material is laying over the rock to protect.
Oh, I see. That's a good concern.
Yeah, and you see, and so even if they're rubbery feet, as you describe it.
Yeah, I understand now. I didn't know they were stuck in a fence.
Yes, ma'am. Or in a, not, I won't, it's a fence material that is laid over the rock, and so.
Well, they're stuck on it. If they were stuck on it, wouldn't they be pulling at it and falling down?
Oh, they attempted, and one did fall down.
Oh.
But again, there's nowhere to fall but about 300 feet down.
Well, that's a good concern. That's a good concern.
But I understand, and I'm
since
not.
Since I know the story.
Yeah, but you know, we here at the station, or me on this show.
Good, that's good. What you're doing.
I will stimulate humanity, human spirit.
Very good. Did you see the horses in the Aloha parade?
Yes.
They didn't look too good to me.
Okay.
They couldn't walk in the sun. They could hardly walk. They were bucking. They were mad. No more horses in the Hawaiian parade.
Uh-huh.
They didn't look too well, some of those horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that sometimes...
Did you notice that?
I did. I see them quite often.
Did you
often.
Notice that, like, they were a little hungry and scrawny?
I don't...
And he says anything.
I didn't
He's
look at
He's taking care of those big, beautiful horses that we used to have. Yeah. No more.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Now, I won't go that far to say they were unfed and...
Oh, well, they look very weak. They could hardly walk.
Mm-hmm.
And they were angry. They didn't want walking in that sun and that hot pavement. But mm-hmm. they make them walk, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's do our concerns. But you know what? Let's do the concern for the people.
Yeah. Well,
also.
Well, keep in mind, I ask is to try and to instigate
is
humanity.
I didn't understand that they were stuck in a fence.
But not only that, here's the other problem. Let's say we get past and we find that we don't need to be sensitive to the animals, whatever path you want
to
take.
You're supposed to be sensitive to everything.
Right, but imagine...
Sensitive is concerned.
Imagine, though, let's get past that and think about the insensitive nature of the officials who know that this threat looms above, overhead, for 5 days and see no anxiety or see no need to rush.
Well, let me tell you.
To go and abate the issue.
Let me tell you, maybe the officials do not know. You call up the governor's office
mm-hmm.
and you tell them. Because once there was a whale for 1 or 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I called the girl, she told me to call the police. Mm-hmm. I told her, you give this message to Linda Lingle that the whale is in Kahalu and it's going to contaminate the people and everybody's going to get sick. In mm-hmm. 10 or 15 hours, that whale was out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But the message went straight to Linda Lingle's office.
Well, now, remember, it was people like you who called me and alerted me because they say they had called the government
for 14
for
days.
four days and did nothing.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
Oh, see, I see.
See what...
Well, when I called, she didn't know anything, and the girl didn't know anything. She said, call the police. I said, you give this message to Linda Lingle mm-hmm. and never take not even 10... Before I knew it, that whale was gone.
Mm-hmm.
She got the message.
Yeah, and then she brought in the super ferry, and so all the other whales. Well, did they wash ashore too? So
oh yeah. But we have to be careful on the super ferry. Cannot go too much and hit the thing. But you know, we walk on the street, and the buses hit us.
Well, yeah, that is an issue, and they run into fences and walls at Kawaihao Church because of
The guy wasn't feeling well driving the bus
mm-hmm.
and the bus hit the wall and some of those bus drivers are so sick while they're driving the bus they cannot help it but they want to go to work and feed the family but some of them are negligent and they don't care.
I believe that what I'm trying to advocate here is that caring is contagious, so if I could hear from you, let everybody else out there know
caring is the key word of life,
and therefore no person, no animal should be suffering because...
That's right.
Because of the state officials are too darn lazy.
That's right. Well, you tell the state officials.
Yeah.
And they're going to get the helicopter and they're going to pick him. But his leg might be stuck in that wire and it might break the poor guy's legs. So he might have to have a fire guy to go down there and cut the wire for him and let him go.
Okay.
You know,
once I saw a bird around the yard, and when I looked, that bird couldn't walk
mm-hmm.
or fly. When I looked, he had that little bird had thread on his legs. Mm-hmm. So I grabbed him slowly. I cut everything. I kept him. I fed him, and I let him go.
Mm-hmm. And now he sings for you every morning, and you wake up.
No, he doesn't sing to me every morning.
Well, at least his buddies do, and that in itself is worth
caring
saving their life.
For everyone, everybody.
Yeah.
You go to the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't care for you. What do? You go to another doctor.
Yeah. Well, Mike has a comment for you there.
You know, actually, in the Hawaii Constitution, and we kind of blessed, I mean, this is the only constitution in the United States that actually says that no one should lay on the roadside. I mean, you know, it's the promise of the broken paddle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and don't you know, take care of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And don't leave anyone on the side of the road. I mean, you know, be sensitive, care for everybody.
But that guy cannot lay on the side of the road sleeping and being neglected and not buying himself a house and go sleep inside a house.
Right.
Don't think I own this land. I can sleep on the road and do anything I want. That is called littering. That's a law. You cannot, not littering, loitering. You cannot loiter any place. You have to go in your house and go sleep. Don't bother the citizens.
Yeah, well, just remember, our goal in life is to try to learn to care about everything and anything.
Yes, you know, when I call the doctor's office, you know what they say?
Mm-hmm.
We're not taking any more patients. Why couldn't she say, you know, we're full, we can't take any more patients. Please call this doctor, and he will help you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that.
Well, this is the same state that go to the parks and push out the homeless. So I wasn't too shocked to see that they're really not caring for two shit.
They are caring. They're telling them to come over here and stay over here. But the people don't want to listen. Mm-hmm. They don't listen to the law. They have to listen to the law.
Yeah.
They say, we have a house for you. Come here. We have food for you. Come here. And they don't go because they want to take their drugs or do the bad things they want to do with nobody seeing them.
Well, anyway.
And now the police force comes in and put them in the jail, but they don't do it because they said, oh, we have rights.
Yeah.
Well, you have rights. Your rights is to do right. That is your right.
Now, I'll ask of you, if you could use your same wisdom and your same positive approach as you did with the whale and Linda Lingle, if you would get on the phone and call Neil Abercrombie, because I'm sure you have great influence.
I'm sure he's listening.
But I think it would help if you were to call him and tell him he would listen to you.
That would be good.
Okay, now I guess if once you call,
we're counting on you.
Okay.
We're counting on you now, Em.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day.
Aloha.
Yeah, aloha. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
What do you mean we don't have homeless on the sidewalks? Mm-hmm. I just drove by Tent City on the way over here.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, there was one tent next to the other one. It's like row houses.
Mm-hmm. I gotta offer an apology to you. I'm not sitting here being so softy on you. It's just that this is to show you when an agency gets funded, and anything you ask them, it's always a delay.
Yeah.
And everything that has developed didn't just occur overnight. They should have seen it coming because that's what they're hired and paid for, to plan, to have alternatives, to have mitigating measures, to do things if something unexpectedly
Plan B. It's that simple.
So it's not all about the goats or the sheep. It's about how this, again, something as small as this, somebody could die in this, and who allowed them to build such a elaborate meshing and in turn not consider that maybe someone's dog, while they're hiking with their dog, strays or children.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, anybody that has his kid up there should be locked up for stupidity, but besides goats and sheep, nothing will make it on that terrain. I mean,
you think so?
No, it's just who else? I mean, anybody coming over that cliff is done.
Well, that's the thing. There's wild pigs. See, going back, if a goat can do it, then so can a wild pig. See, that's what I mean. If they don't have the mindset or the ability to,
it was predictable.
That's what I mean. We're paying people to sit and plan and schedule, but instead they pick, plan, and pay and not ask the questions.
Right, because if this was a private enterprise who's responsible for what happens, someone would have said to themselves, what do we do in the event of just like this?
Mm-hmm.
But, they weren't planning, they weren't thinking.
I don't think they were doing anything other than collecting the salary, because this, I'm sorry, I'll get past the animal aspect. Just the fact that a danger such as this can just sit there and they can't guarantee me that it was safe. How can the DOT, who has the highways, say, well, we're really not going to worry about it because, what, two animals sitting up there, unpredictable in their behavior?
Right, and I can kind of foresee already their excuse. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we wanted to prevent the rocks from falling, so we put up the mesh. But it was predictable that animals will get caught in a mesh. I mean, we all know we have wild goats and wild sheep. So I would like to know from them, what measures did they take to make sure that this wouldn't occur in the first place? I mean, we're putting up all this mesh. I mean, is there a little fence up there? I mean, you know, they're not going to burrow under a fence. They're not going to jump over the fence if you make it right. So what measures did they take to prevent this? Yeah. I mean, somebody should know.
Yeah, well, I can tell you it's all nonsense because if you don't have a biologist here, you don't need a you need an engineer. Maybe an engineer could come there and tell you if it's plausible to think that you can cut this, and because it's going to be a monumental task. Or do we need to act quickly, go and anesthetize them or euthanize them, but whatever. But the horrible death of them dropping to the cliff because we were around with our thumbs up our butt and trying to do what? Determine who owns the land? Or determine who owns the animals? Or determine, well, maybe they won't jump off the cliff because goats and sheep are sure-footed.
Well, they certainly are, but not with the wire mesh like this. I mean, this is just...
Anyway, I hope I didn't bore any of you, but I'm worried, and it's more of about your government failing you again, and that's the way it is. And hey, and then guess what?
Well, my beef is nobody stepping up to the plate and says this is what we should do. That's it. I mean, whatever the decision is, it's not going to be a popular one.
Right.
But someone has to make a decision.
Yeah, I'm standing there sharing that same sentiment. I mean, this is one of those things I wouldn't want to be the one making the decision because it's a complex one because it involved the possibility of them being euthanized.
Right.
And you know...
Which would, you know, I take the position.
Yeah.
It's the most cost-efficient way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Block the road below, have a guy who knows how to shoot... you know, whoever's authorized to do it,
mm-hmm.
have them shoot the animals. If they've dropped down, that's it. If you know, just euthanize them.
Oh yeah,
it might be not popular. It might, you know,
but
I think it's the most humane under the circumstances, especially if you take into consideration that a human being could get hurt.
Yeah, a human being being hurt, and these animals for 5 days. I dare anyone.
No water.
Any human being to go and stand on a ledge for 5 days. While everyone's debating who and what to do,
right?
That I guarantee you, they would want to be put to sleep because it's looking at it is nerve-wracking. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning. I called the governor's office twice, 15 rings each time. No answer.
No answering machine.
So who do we go to? No answer. No message. So who do we go to now?
Well, I would contact the lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant governor.
Or contact your state official, and maybe they should.
My state official? Who is my
state
official?
Your state representative.
You don't know things in life. Yeah. You do not know everything in life.
Your state representative or your state senator.
My state representative. Who is my... I don't know.
Well, I don't know where you live, my dear.
Oh, I live in the Pearl City area.
Okay, so... I'll go and you live Pearl City area? I don't have time to look it up.
IA area.
I could find it. If any callers out there know who's in IA or the state representatives or the senators, give me a call right
now. They didn't look like they were stuck in a mesh.
Well,
they're standing there so healthy and so happy.
Yeah, well.
I grabbed my goat's leg. He wouldn't let me hold his leg. He'd be running and pulling. And falling down.
Yeah. Well, it's not what it appears.
That's
so.
Good that you have your concern. That's very good.
Okay.
What you're doing.
All right, M. So you take
okay.
care.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Anyway.
Well, it's not natural for them to be standing there 4 days inside seeing.
I can only conclude that if it's a natural process and they're standing there for 4 days, then... I'll cast everything aside and I'll go and stand there because it must be a sight that's generating some great spiritual relief.
For sheep.
I mean, because I know they would love to. Because the rest of his harem is just over the ridge sitting there waiting above the chapel at Sea Life Park. There's six of them standing there waiting. And the ewe that's up on the ledge that's trapped is looking, constantly looking in that direction at them. She can see them from
her. Right. It's part of the herd.
Yeah, part of the herd. And so, anyway, sound probably like a lot of nonsense today, but I assure you, if it's having anything with a government decision, then it matters.
It's once again a lack of action.
Yeah. And so we're not
going to taking responsibility.
Yeah, and we'll go away with knowing that and letting you know that we understand that these are they're domesticated animals that were went feral. The theory is that if it costs money, the average person says, "Well, just shoot them." I don't subscribe to that, but I would say to you, we need to be a little more sensitive and be more aggressive with state officials. I mean, everything that shows up in the hands of government officials, there's always some failure attached to it. There's a climate of failure, or dragging their feet, or just something they're incompetent, not anticipating this kind of thing. There should have been, hey, what if an animal? What do we do?
Yeah.
That should be in the book.
It was foreseeable. The animals were there before they put the mesh up.
Yeah.
I mean, not those specific ones, but they all know the animals out there.
But like I say, in that study that they did up on the ridge, they were concerned about the population of sheep and goat exploding up there, getting out of hand. So they know and they knew that there was a potential for this occurring. And yet, biologist was off island.
Well, you're just raising something else. I mean, if they're exploding up there, what are they doing to the environment? I mean,
yeah.
The plants, etc.
Yeah.
So we're not going to have any eradication on this island because we have too many people, or people might hear the shots.
Yeah.
Molokai is a little bit more practical. People over there hunt a lot.
Yeah. But again, folks, there's your government at its best, and I know it's about the goat, and you probably, some of you probably think, what a waste of time. But I would like to say that if we can't be sensitive about some things, then we're doomed, period. I don't care what it is. And if you allow your government to display with such openness the sensitivity to animals and its responsibilities, then we're doomed. So thanks for joining me, and again, happy Father's Day to all of you out there. And Mike, thanks for joining, and we'll talk again anytime. So aloha.
All right, aloha.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show. Heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show right here at KWAI Honolulu.